Texas.
And were you born here?
No, I was not born here, but I've been traversing back and forth for the last 40 or 50 years. In fact, my wife's father was born in Corpus Christi.
Yes, sir.
That way back in the 1800s. Maybe in the 1700s.
You had some stories to tell.
So I won't answer specific, but if you want me to keep on talking, I'd be glad to do
it. That's fine. This is what we're after.
First of all, he was born here, and real coincident that he finally came here to work. Now, I was very good friend of Ed Crockett. Ed Crockett, every white person in the city knows Ed Crockett. Ed Crockett was the first Negro to serve on a jury. I'm very sorry I can't pronounce that date, but I think that could be easily gotten at the courthouse.
I'm sure.
That the prophet was evidently must have been about 1892 or something like that. He served on a jury. He was a Negro serving on a jury, and we became very good friends. And I was executed for his estate when his wife died. She died here about, I could get the exact date, but 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Young, who is now in Congress, thought a great deal of Ed Crockett. And he did his business at the then Corpus Christi State Bank.
Yes.
The Corpus Christi State Bank and the Corpus Christi National Bank finally merged. But Ed Crockett did business at the Corpus Christi State Bank. I think it would be appropriate here to, he told me quite a few of true stories, and this can be verified by the officials of the bank. A pigeon was dropped on him one time with money, and he just so happened he had some of his wife's money to deposit. And of course, he had $300 of his wife's money he was going to deposit at Corpus Christi State Bank. But the man wanted $500. So he went to the bank and drew $200 more and went with this fella. And finally, the fella said, come on, you can wait else, you can come with me. He said, but I just have to run upstairs here and say I have $1,000 bill and I'm going to get it changed. And I run upstairs and I let you, I'll be right back. Say, better give me your money so we can get this all cleared up. He went upstairs and everything must have gone down on the fire escape. And when this Crockett, after waiting about an hour, he went up and tried to look for him, and the man never was seen. And Mr. Crockett told him, I enjoyed hearing him tell that to me, because he said he went out to the bayfront and decided that the best thing to do was just to drown himself. And so some of his friends came by and said, Ed, what are you doing out there? He said, I never tell a lie. I said, I came out here to drown myself. And his friend said, oh, Ed, no need to do that. What's happened? And then he told him what happened, and he said, come on, let's go to town and get a drink, and you soon forget that. And so I can't tell it like he told it, but every time, in fact, I went to his house to visit, I went there many times for lunch, and we were very good friends, donuts and so forth, and just talked. He didn't have to tell that to me again, because he said if it had been his money, so wouldn't he care so much? I said he could have gotten over it, but it was his wife's money. He had come home and tell her what happened. So that was the end of that story. But anyway, this same Ed Crockett, he was highly respected by, in fact, every white citizen in town. In fact, his property, he owned all the property down near the station down there.
Yes, sir.
Where I think it's the cement plant down there, his property was. He sold it out to the cement plant, and Judge Rung immediately arranged for them to get Mrs. Crockett a place to stay, and she resided up here on Upper Broadway until she died. I thought that should be told. And if you don't mind, I'd like to interweave this in the story too, since we're talking about old timers.
Sure.
This is something that probably very few students know. My native home is in Temple, Texas. I was a personal friend of Governor Ferguson. In fact, I was the head waiter at his first banquet when he was getting ready to be nominated as governor of the state of Texas. It so happened, he had a young Negro boy who came from down about Gideon someplace, but he was a waiver boy, and they decided to keep this boy. They kept him right in the house with him and called, no doubt that's where that name came from. All the white kids knew that what was happening. He called Mrs. Ferguson, Ma Ferguson, and Mr. Ferguson, David Ferguson, and this boy was a very good friend of mine. In fact, he married one of the first girls in my family. Joe Jackson was his name. But thinking about that, I want to tell you about Sammy Houston Ballet. Now, if you want further information on this, I'm sure you can get it from a young lady from Baylor Harding University who wrote her thesis on this. But this man I'm going to tell you about now is the man who was Sammy Houston Ballet. History doesn't tell about that. I'd like to, let me see, I want to be sure of his name. I don't want to get this fellow mixed up with Ed Crockett, both an old citizen of the state of Texas. So anyway, this man was, can you hold me just a minute?
Sure, no problem. No,
Miss Sampson? Hello?
I refuse to fill up doing this part.
I want to tell you about this, but I have some material on it, and I'll check it in just a few minutes. But back to Corpus Christi. The interesting thing about Corpus Christi is we talk about integrated schools. The first school in Corpus Christi, in a measure, was integrated, Corpus Christi Public School. The Negro school was on the same campus with the white school.
About what year was this now? What'd you say?
Well, that, I'm sure we can find that out by a telephone call. But it was on the same campus, Corpus Christi Public School. We just had a little divide in mind, but they were the Negro would always be caught playing with the white kid would be caught playing with the Negro. But that first school, the Negroes went to school with the white. Now, some of the people who went to school out there, you've heard of Nettie Levis. In fact, she just died a few years ago. And Mrs. Little, I think her daughter's here now. That could be verified because her daughter's still living here. Mrs. Littles, who lived down on Mary Street. Her mother went to school on this same campus with the white school. That I was thinking about the the address, that's one feature that I thought you'd like to know.
Yes, sir.
You thought of it?
The first name is Jeff something.
I got it now, I got it. I know what it is.
Honey.
That's my wife.
How are you?
She's all right, she doesn't hear so very well.
I'm on my.
She, he's speaking to you, honey, and he said, hi.
Honey, nice to see you.
But, this, is still running now?
Sure.
This valet of Sammy Houston, his name was Jeff Hamilton. Jeff Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
Now, he was the official valet of Sam Houston. And that man, talked about Sam Houston just like he talked about his father until his death. Now, we stayed next door to his son when I lived in Temple. And, a young lady from Baylor Harding University, you might like to check on that. Baylor Harding University, interviewed Jeff Hamilton, I think wrote a book on Sammy Houston's valet. Now, back to Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi, when I first came here to Wake, that had a population of 47,500 people. And then the motto, instead of the sparkling city by the sea, I prefer this motto to the sparkling city by the sea. The motto then was Corpus Christi, where the ocean of the world meet, where the seas meet. Yes. And it's so true, because the Gulf of Mexico is in the middle, sea line there, and from one side the Atlantic Ocean comes into it, and from the other side the Pacific Ocean comes into it. And consequently, it seemed like to me that's a typical name, and Corpus Christi is in the center of the Gulf, and that's where the seas meet. Corpus Christi, where the seas meet. I really like that motto, and you might go to the Chamber of Commerce and find some of those old bulletins, but they had that motto instead of the sparkling city by the sea. Corpus Christi is simply beautiful at night, I'm sure, definitely sure that's why I didn't say that, but this is more geographic, seems to me, and it means more than just the sparkling city, because if the lights go out in Corpus Christi, like it was during the city when we didn't have the lights, as we say Corpus Christi, where the seas meet, the seas would still be meeting irrespective of what time. Now that was the motto of Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi, where the seas meet, where the seas meet the sea. Now I thought that was quite interesting. So I came to Corpus Christi and taught under the administration of Mr. R. B. Fisher.
What school was that?
The Simon Cole High School. I was principal for that school for 14 years, longer than any other principal ever served in that particular school. And of course, after retiring, I traveled a bit. In fact, I always wanted to see Jackie Robinson play. So I took a trip, 1953, I think it was, to see Jackie Robinson play in his last World Series game. New York City. That was one of my ambitions. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And after coming back, the superintendent, Mr. Reed, who was superintendent of the West Oslo system, asked me would I open the first Negro school out there for me. And it was called Carl Allen School. And of course I did. As you know, various cities have different ages for retirement. Corpus Christi retirement was 65 and San Antonio retirement was 70. I told someone I wish they had known that I'd been living in San Antonio now this time, because I was going out of San Antonio. I'm sure I could have gotten a job, because I thought we had quite a successful administration here. Some of the citizens of Caneville will remember when Simon McCoy played at the stadium out there. We had about as many people as the white high schools had.
You'd be surprised to know we made it out there.
High as 20,000 people see our game out there, because we always won. In fact, I have a district game, and we won two state championships. And the Kiwanis Club, well, I won't get mixed up now, it's a shame, you know, to get over and forget them. But the Kiwanis, our alarm club, I think it was the Kiwanis Club, sponsored our game to have raised money every year. And that game every year had 15 or 20,000 people. They sponsored the games between us and the most outstanding Negro team in the state every year. And consequently, our team was quite well known. And I just thought we had a real good school and a real good team. And I was the first Negro to have anything to do with junior college. Before we could go to the junior college, they opened up a sub-junior college in my school. And of course, I was a supervisor at that particular junior college.
About when was that, would you say?
That was in 1940.
When was it that you first moved down here, Mr. Simpson?
I came in 1938. When you took the principalship in 1939.
I see. And at that time, it was Solomon Coles was the only Negro school in town.
The only Negro school in town, that's right.
Would you say that?
And we had, if I'm not mistaken, I would be sure, we had about 11 or 12 teachers. But before I left Solomon Coles, you'd be surprised, we had 42 teachers. In fact, we cut up the gym into classrooms, and we had 42 teachers. Right now, there at Solomon Coles, 42 Negro teachers.
Would you say that y'all had given the opportunity to have as good facilities as many of the white schools here in town?
Well, it just simply wasn't possible. Under my administration, we got a cafeteria, we got a shop, but the shop wasn't as well equipped as the white shops were. But for the size of the school it was, I think we did very well, because we had a good four-year high school, wasn't any question about that, simply because we, literally speaking, but we did not have the industrial part. We didn't have auto mechanics, we didn't have electrical situation. In fact, we didn't have a band when I came here, and of course, when I came here, we bought first instrument for the school, first instrument and uniform. We purchased them ourselves by raising the money. I had a popular song review every year, and it would just crowd in. And besides that, every high school, a junior high school in town, would invite us out. And we always picked up $60 or $70 from these schools. That's the way we bought our first uniform. Man, I never shall forget our first suit uniform, I think, cost $220. But after that, the school was purchased some instruments. And, our first uniform we made them in the home making department. First band uniform made them in the home making department. And later on, these schoolboy purchases uniform. And of course, I think I was directly responsible for the first baseball team, too. And for some reason, the director of athletics at that time, I forgot who he was, and if I knew, I wouldn't want to call his name. Didn't want us to have baseball, because he made observation, said we've only had two successful baseball boys move here. One was Busby, and he called the other. I knew Busby because he lived one block from me over there in Hillcrest. Yes. And he had made good with the Chicago White Sox. And for that reason, it just looked like, I'm going to admit, he didn't use his term, looked like we'd lose money. Put baseball in Solomon Coles. But finally, one of the board members said, do you have baseball in Miller? They said, yes. But do you have baseball in, I forgot, and Reagan? They said, yes. So we went out to Miller High School to confer about baseball.
Well, Mr. Superintendent said, we just losing time, said, I would make a motion we have baseball in Solomon Cove too, just like that. Say they're all high school, Solomon Cove to high school, why not?
In the early days there, did you get very much of this type of, the same type of feeling that you got from this one athletic director that people weren't?
Oh, yes, I had the fellow who was over the, that's the most pavement, I don't want to call his name too, but the fellow who was over shop, he said, Jack makes some little flower pots and buck racks and things, said, because we don't want the Negroes competing with the white people. And he actually said that. We don't want the Negroes competing with white people. I said, why not? You want the best. Well, that's just the way it is.
He
came right out and said that we don't want the Negroes competing with the white people. And because that's not, like it was the temple, one time the temple chairman of the board, see, after every game, all of the schools, when they won a game, they'd go through downtown hollering and, oh, we won or something like that. And so they called me up at temple and said, some of them might say, thank you for disturbing the town, said. And the reason was, at that time, it was really amusing, because the temple was having a losing streak, and we won, in fact, all our games, so we got to holler more uptown than they did. And so this chairman, I said, I left his dad, so I called his name. His name was Mr. Neely. He said, Sampson, do you think you're as good as a white man? I said, Mr. Neely, and I said, we were talking about the boy Cherry. I think that not even to be considered. I didn't say yes, I didn't say no. I figured if I said yes, I might not have had a job, because after all, that was chairman of the book. So I just said, we're not even discussing that, who is the better. I said, if you want the boys and girls to stop yelling through town, naturally I can stop them from doing it. And that's where I ended up. He never did force me for that.
Would you say when you first got down here in Corpus that, what would you say the atmosphere was toward the Negro, the white man toward the Negro, and from South Texas in general?
Well, I'll say this. You'd be surprised. When I came here to get the job, I had to endure every bullet, every single one of them. And most of them were quite cordial. Because I came in December, and they told me to wake up a program. And my program had it all typed up. Two big long sheets, and everything was on them. And they appreciated that, and I could they did. And so, in that respect, I thought it was quite nice, but I was afraid I'd tell you what happened. That was the most unfortunate thing. And we sang, we had a very good musician, outstanding choir director, and we had quite a few offers to go to the Kiwanis Club, Blonde Club, you know, sing for the those public clubs. And so I never shall forget. And the race went to, well, I had two occasions like that. I went to Brace, I went to the then hotel up there, Lester Driscoll Hotel. I can't think of the name of it right now. But they told us, said, you have to ride up on the elevator, commercial elevator. I said, no, I don't think so. I said, we're the guests. I never shall forget it. Mr. Yarber was speaking, the fellow group of men up there. He was running for senator. And so I said, no, I wouldn't have the girls ride on. I said, on that elevator where they bring down sloppy material. And so I called up to her. I told him, I said, I would dare to ride on this commercial elevator. And so they called out and said, will you permit those people to come on up on the regular elevator while people ride? And I went up, and when I got ready to go down, the same thing happened. Well, I said, you can't ride on this elevator, you have to ride on the, I said, oh, no, I don't think so. Then I sat and got the chairman of the program, and made him so mad. He let out, he said, excuse me, lady, and said, will you take these people down on the elevator where they're supposed to go? But I had another incident. I went to the New Asia Hotel for a program. They say, you have to pass through the kitchen. I said, oh, no, I don't think so. I said, we're the guests. We're the guests of the people in here. And so I didn't say to anybody. I just went on through the front door. And oh, boy, the bell boys looked at us, looked at us. That's just, I just went on through the front door and went out the front door. And so that was the end of that. But my teachers, Negroes had never met with the teachers here, the white teachers. And so Mr. Fisher said, Mr. Sampson said, I'm having a principal meeting today. Said, I'd like you to come. Said, now, I want, this is exactly what he said. Said, I want to be third accepted. Said, so if when you come, I appreciate it if you kind of sit on the back seat. Said, after the public get to know you, say, I think we got to find a group of principals. And said, you be fully accepted. Well, the first time I went, you realize that. Setting the back on the back by himself. And so after that, fellas knew me and said, come on, Sampson, let's go in. And of course, whoever I was with, whether it was white principal I was with, I sat by that principal and I never had him no trouble. He said, Mr. Sampson, I hate to tell you that, but I wasn't sure of the attitude they would take. Said, you've been thoroughly accepted. All of them seem to like you and said, I'm sure you won't have any trouble. And the same thing happened when after that, all the teachers met together. And they didn't tell the teachers to sit on the back seat. And so the teachers just started sitting everywhere they wanted to sit. But in other words, that peculiar feeling, it soon broke down. I think coffee grease is unusual for most southern towns, to be perfectly frank with you, in that respect, because they were quite cordial to quite a few people. I remember when my coach and I went to banquet, and they asked him to tell about his team. And so some white fellow, I don't know why he was, said to somebody else, said, you know, I didn't know they had Negroes coming up here at the dinner. And so the coach, John Thomas, got up and said, I heard a white person say it didn't know Negroes were admitted up here, said, but I want to tell him that's just Corpus Christi way of doing things. And all the fellas just like him. And so I just thought of that one particular instance where somebody was saying that. So that's just about it.
I'm wondering, what were, when you first moved down here, what were the general job opportunity situation for Negroes?
Well, longshoreman was the principal job, longshoreman hotel waiting. Those were the two principal jobs for Negroes. Very few Negroes worked on all of them, because when I came here, they might have needed electric lights in town. Oil torches all around the city. They literally lighted up all of Corpus Christi. But of course, I'm sure we had lights in town, but didn't have any needs because, like, every available spot all around is just lighted with those oil torches. They literally lighted up all of Corpus Christi. But I don't remember very few Negroes back then. Of course, then we had railroad porters that wait for the railroad companies. We didn't have any basement yet. But out of Caneville, it seemed as if that was the agreement. You can run, that's one thing I say about business trade,
I understand she divided, came up in four parts, that I found to be quite true. Said one part of Caneville was for Negroes. I don't know whether you ever thought about that. Not one part was for Mexican, one part for white, and then one part was for the business section, another part was for A&I College. Now, but it said she would not permit a Mexican to have business, and I don't know whether it's that way or not. I've been planning to that business in the Negro part. A white person wouldn't permit a white person. And of course, in other words, in the white section, all white people had to have their business. The Negro section, Negroes had to have business. And the Mexican section, all the Mexicans had their business. And as a result, and she told us that you can run the track, the railroad through here. You check on that. That's just hearsay. Provided you permit all the people to work on the railroad and do whatever you have to do. And as a result, they've had hundreds and hundreds of Negro brakemen down there, all the way from Caneville to Brownville. I think you need to find it that true yet. And I don't know whether they've discarded that. I'd like to know that. I'm going to find out myself. But if you just have one business, the Negro, all Negro business in the Negro section, all white business in the white section, all Mexican business in the Mexican section. And say that's I don't know whether it's Mrs. Kane or Mrs. Craybrake, but it's one of those people that infatuates. We're one of that man. So Papa Mrs. Kane. We're one of all of that man, because they have all the man from there almost to Mexico. We're one of the Kane ranks that they permitted them to have that town and run the railroad through that, provided that they did that. Seemed like they were quite fair to everybody.
Well, also curious about the way Corpus was divided up as far as Negro community and white community. Was there just a real strip?
Well, this is, that's right. This they just started. I served on the city planning board for a whole year. We had a gentleman come down from Kansas City to St. Louis. Who was a specialist in that. And I served on the planning board for a whole year, and I wrote a plan, and I can't find my, I wrote up a whole pamphlet. At that time, Negroes didn't have much of a space to stay. But at that time, I wrote up in the space, they say they would give Negroes all of Hillcrest. That's where I live in now. Nothing liberal here but white people. Negroes didn't come any further than that graveyard down there, which is a dividing line. You come up, that's Kennedy Street. On this side of Kennedy Street was a graveyard. And of course, they Negroes weren't permitted to come in this part of town. I mean, to reside here, to live here. But in that planning board, 10-year planning board, President Harbin of Delmont College was chairman of the planning board. And I was one of the active members. We called in different businessmen to quiz them and ask them about various things. But anyway, and so I insisted that they give the Negroes a place to stay. And then we finally decided to give the Negroes Hillcrest, because the white people would find other places to stay. And pledged ourselves to secrecy. Nobody told it. But I did tell some of my friends. And some little friend told somebody else, and they said, well, Samson, the damn lie, said Negroes never will live in Hillcrest. So it came back to me and said, Samson, the damn lie, said Negroes never will live in Hillcrest. But as a result, 90% of Hillcrest, nothing but Negroes. And even the school there, that was a white school. Crawford School, elementary school, that was a white school. And now it's about 90% Negro school.
About the city transportation systems, were they totally divided up also? It was Negro?
Well, it's a shame to say that, but it looked like I was mixed up in everything. I was on the first, the very first human relations committee. They didn't call it that then. What would you call committees like that? It was the Anyway, it was a raise committee, the Hepsaw raise problem, that's what the committee was. And Mr. Peel, well, probably was head of the undertaking problem. Mr. Peel was chairman of it, I was vice chairman. Yes. And so we worked on that because they were having problems on the bus at that time. So finally we got the bus company to break down, sending the Negroes to the back and of the bus. And because those Negro neighbormen weren't going to the back. And so that would cause a problem. They just went to see, I guess, men of different parts of the country. They weren't going to sit in the back and they were causing a problem. And the bus driver couldn't make them do that. And so finally, we got went to the bus company and told them, there's no need of creating a problem like that. Say, permit these people to sit in the back. They want to sit. Now that was the custom practice throughout the South, if you remember Martin Luther. That was started the whole Martin Luther program. A Negro woman was set up in front. And of course, they tried to force her to go in the back, and I think they finally put her in jail, and that's when Martin Luther called the strike in Birmingham. You know all about that. So anyway, so we finally got them to decide to permit Negroes to sit anyway on the bus. They wanted to sit, but proceeded that time. There was an division in the bus. So that broke that up.
Let me ask you to try to create a situation here.
Oh yes, let me say this, I forget it. I was the first Negro popular that was served on a human relations committee in the South.
About what year was that? Can you remember
that? That hadn't been so long ago. That was that woman sure was like my sister, and I think they can get another. I hope it is. Maybe she can give us some information. But anyway, that's Mrs. Mother's daughter, so she'll be able to help us out how to deal. But anyway, that was 1960. Come in. I had just finished talking about your mother. Yes. But anyway, I believe that was 67 or 68, the first human relations committee ever in the state of Texas. The former mayor, Mike Nonner, was chairman of it. And of course, we effectuated the integration in Corpus Christi, you know, with our program. And Mrs. Farenthal was on that too, on that same committee. And we did a great deal of good without any problem whatever. Just two or three people that that worked just a little bit, but other than that, we had no problem in Corpus Christi. Now it's fully integrated. And of course, we reside in Wyandotte. We want to reside out on the south side. Negroes living all out on the south side. And Dr. Hall, before we effectuated that, built Cumhoff out on Ocean Drive. And of course, not to say it, I'll say it about that. And I never shall forget Mr. The man I bought my home from on John Street, I never shall forget it. Mr., he's still here. He said, I understand Dr. Hall is going to build a home on Ocean Drive. Said, if he does that, hell's going to break loose. I said, Mr., I wish I could think of his name. They better not call his name. I said, I'm surprised. I said, you wouldn't have hell break loose with you, Mr., I called his name. And he said, no, but I hear some of my friends talking about it. And so I said, well, if it breaks loose, I said, remember, I'll be right out there in this house with him. I'll be right there with him.
Mr. And, Harris told me about Dr. Hall.
And so anyway, he built his home out there, but after our human relations committee, anyway, you were able to buy them, you resided there.
So I don't think I heard the superintendent last night talk about the reason why some of the integration might they did more fully integrated, said might start a white flight in Corpus Christi, which I do not believe, because they are of such nature here that they started a white flight, but the Negro flight would be right out there with them, especially if they had nice homes, because Negroes want exactly the same thing the better class white people want. So it's not good to say Negroes want, but white people want, because some of the white people live in homes that I would want to live in, but they want they're in best homes than white people, like the white people. They want to live comfortably, you see. You take my place here. I wish I could have a better place than this. Could have it air conditioned so you wouldn't be suffering with the heat in here. But I'm not able to put air conditioning in with this front door. And in the summer, I raise my windows and I get all the cool air I want. So that the Human Relations Committee helped a great deal.
Let me ask you a question, kind of going back a little bit earlier. If I were a Negro man, say back in 39, I was driving through the right part of town, and I had car trouble, so I had a flat tire, and it was night, and I had to go around from door to door to get some help, so only way I could get helped out. What do you think might have been the kind of situation I'd run into, man?
Well, it would be like Dallas. If you were a Negro man in Dallas and been out in your car broke down in Highland Park. I had an uncle that lived on the other side of Highland Park. If it broke down in Highland Park or some of those places, at that time, best thing for you to do is just go off and leave that car. Don't try to fix it anything, because something might happen to you. But here, I don't think anything would happen at all.
People got on pretty good even back then.
Oh, yeah. This is Mrs. Glover's daughter. You don't believe I was talking about her. I was telling them Mrs. Glover, yes, I was telling them about your mother, Mrs. Little, going to school on the same campus with white people than the first school did. Could you say something about that? This is Mrs. Rhea, let's call her Mrs. Rhea Lovers. For the record.
Oh, yes, the school was down.
Come up a little closer so you can get
the school was back of Perkins Brothers in Muncie. You don't know about Perkins Brothers, it was right there.
Across from the Gatchee Bell.
You know where the Board of Education is now?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that's where. Well, that was the old high school, white high school, for years. When I came out, it was a white school. And my mother said when she was a girl, they went and it's adjoining, I think, right next to this school, where she went to school. But when I came along, there were over 500 or 600 Negroes in town. And we didn't have enough Negroes to warrant the high school. That's mean we had one school, where Coles was located now. It wasn't called Coles at that time. And
what were the conditions of it?
The Negroes, the Corpus Christi never had a racial problem that I know of, because it was a resort, winter resort, and summer resort, and the Caucasians that came here were from eastern states, northern states, western states. So they really never, they never had a problem. They always treat people like the human beings around. You mentioned in 1939. I don't think a thing would have happened. They would have let you use a telephone something.
Right.
I never heard, I don't, unless, of course, as my mother said, when the town started growing, people started coming in from everywhere, southern states as well as the others.
I don't know, but even any games, sometimes I have those games.
I don't remember any
games
that we had around here. Ku Klux Klan, they were supposed to. When my father lived, they claimed they had a chapter here, whatever you call it, but they never paraded. was never known that they had an organization yet because it didn't permit. And pictures like, what was that, the first? I was small, but I was my dad.
Birth of the Nation. Birth of the Nation. Yes,
sir. Ever hear that? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, but any picture like that, my dad, he would get right in it here and was it. He never did show. He'd get this and talk, go to the city council or something, and tell them they didn't show.
I'm part of it. I'm questioning one of the outstanding Negroes of town. In fact, the Negro Center here was named for her father, D.N. of the Center. That's who they named it for Mr. Leathers, because he was an outstanding man and stood very highly among all the people, both white and colored, in the city.
We grew up here, it was just like a big family, everybody knew us. And the better whites knew my father, my mother. If they saw us in the grand town, they knew we weren't supposed to do anything. We'd get on my dad and say, well, so-and-so called, said they saw you such and such a place. And you were doing this and that, because that's just the way everybody got along. Was in public, in business. But everybody was treated the same. I never heard the lowest, humblest Negro in the town ever being mistreated in their life. They weren't actually segregated where we lived. The man that was George Clark, president of the State Bank, he lived about two and a half blocks from us. Dr. Livingstone, his partner, you know, Dr. Livingstone.
About a block
from
school.
Then about two blocks from us, and right next door was a West Indian family from Jamaica. And they lived there together through the years, as long as I
was. That's the place that
we were all mixed.